She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you for joining us today. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies. Their dedication to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices is why Fairfax is the leader in our community in the business of sustainability. Thank you so much, Fairfax, for your support of our mission and vision. Yet another important guest with a powerful story on our show today. Very happy, very, very happy to welcome. And Elaine, I am so going to try and do this right. Elaine Dupuis.
Good, that's good. It's Elaine Dupuis.
Dupuis. Good, I will get it right. I've been practicing. Founder and navigator of Ode Magazine, News for Intelligent Optimists. We welcome you so much and look forward to hearing about your continuing and amazing journey.
Thank you.
Okay, let's do a few announcements. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network and Castle Rock Radio Network, where my shows can also be heard weekly. Please visit my website, mrsgreensworld.com, for weekly broadcast times and links to their website. They are helping me spread the good green word throughout the country and indeed the world. And a reminder to all of you that we interview guests from around the United States every Saturday at noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. And we certainly invite you to join us each week. You can listen on your iPhone or Droid. We're trying to make that simpler for you. There's an app for that, and that's a work in progress. And if you cannot listen live at noon because you're busy doing other things, all of the podcasts from my shows live on my website for your listening pleasure, so you can listen on your own time and in your own environment. Please remember to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram. And if you have questions for any of our guests, we would love to hear from you before the show, info@mrsgreensworld.com, or any questions about any of the content, we will close that loop. And a shout out about one of our national sponsors that I do at this part of the show each week, Ecobella. My theme for the month of May is all about mothers, and it was coincidental or accidentally on purpose, as I like to say, that Ecobella chose that as their theme. And I just think it's not just about our mothers or ourselves as a mother, but about Mother Earth and celebrating all that includes Mother's Day, which is coming up next week. And what a great opportunity for all of us to make conscious choices, because if you've been listening to my show for any time whatsoever, you know I think it's all about living consciously. And what better way to honor your mother, hint, hint, to my daughters who might be watching, listening, or your mother's friends, or yourself as a mother, to get sustainably sourced products that are not harmful, don't have harmful ingredients in them, and from companies who walk the walk of integrated sustainable operating practices. And Ecobella is one of those companies. And my shout out for one of their products for the show, I admit I have never worn red lipstick in my whole entire life, but their flower color lipsticks has something called Redvelation. And I'm actually saying this on national radio. But what I love about it is it is dye-free, it's petroleum-free, it's preservative-free, it's fragrance-free, it's free, it's gluten-free. It's free to put on your lips and not worry. It feels more like a lip gloss, like it has waxy flowers made from wax. So ingredients made from the flower wax. It's a very interesting concept to me. So check it out at Ecobella with 2Cs.com. And if you like what you see, just enter Mrs. Green at the code at checkout, and you will get 10% off your purchase. So let's get started with the show, because I told Elaine, I don't want to stumble over that. I'm not going to say your name anymore, I don't think, because I want the content of what you've done is so important, and the movement you started in 1994, that I think that let's make that the focus. And go back to when you and your husband started. What was your vision and what was your mission when you first started the magazine?
Well, that was in 1994. And we had just come back from an extensive stay in India, where we were correspondents, writing stories, taking pictures, and traveling a lot. And we were mostly sent to places where disasters had happened, and we were covering those. And then often afterwards, say a day or two later, we would read what our colleagues from Reuters and other organizations would had covered, had written, and we often felt like, oh wow, were we at the same event? Because
it seems
they're at a much more sort of dramatic. They've seen something much more dramatic, and it took us a little while to discover that our reporting was focused differently, and that mainstream reporting often is jazzed up with fear and extra turmoil and extra drama. And we came to realize, mostly by the phone calls from our parents, who were really, really concerned about us being in India or Pakistan or Bangladesh, wherever we were, because they read such ghastly news. And where we were, there was nothing wrong. I mean, there were some incidents here and there, but life was pretty normal. We were not in danger. And we realized that the newspapers that they were reading were giving them, torped news. And this is how we saw what the responsibility is of journalists, how journalists have a huge responsibility and should actually take an oath at the end of their training to never, ever exaggerate and to always, always take into account that whatever they're seeing is subjective. It's subjectively seen by them, and thus is not the truth or the news. Because journalists can really cause wars by just writing certain things. And it was us taking responsibility in 1994, where we decided we should do something to counterbalance the negativity in the news. So that's how we first started what we then called our Chronicle of the Undercurrent. We called it Ode, as an ode to people and ideas that are changing the world. And then the byline was Chronicle of the Undercurrent, because then solar energy, for instance, was definitely totally undercurrent, and the word sustainability had not yet been coined. John Elkington had not yet written his book, and So it was definitely undercurrent news that we were looking for and that we were printing and spreading.
And you had this vision to always have it. One of the things I was so impressed about in the research is you had a vision for the news to be about what I would call hope and possibility and change. And as you say, not fear. But at what point did you decide not just to, you know, the undertaking of starting a print magazine is so it's so big even now, but back then in 1994, was there a point at which your husband and you looked at each other and said, okay, we're going to print, we're going to have our own magazine, and we're going to find like-minded people to join us on this journey? And you did that.
Yeah, we did that. And we totally did that. And we also did it in the year that our fourth kid was born. So we were young.
Oh,
we had four really young kids. And we did that. I don't think we can say we were that informed nor that smart doing that. We were pretty naive. We really did not know the full impact of what we got ourselves into. And we found out in the subsequent years that it was a big thing. And we have always, always found like-minded people who in many, many ways wanted to link up with what we were doing. And we have been able to grow it step by step, and we started doing this not because we thought it was economically smart. But we just felt it had to be done. We felt a huge responsibility, and I know that us starting this company has everything to do for our love for one another. So it's for us, it felt like it was another kid that we produced. It was between the two of us. It was like a source that wanted to come out. It's the cooperation, and it's the it's how we complement one another, and it was just what we had to do.
And you're on the journey together, and I think that, you know, the idea of people changing the world for the better, you have now on a lot of the things that are written about you, the phrase intelligent optimist, and I love that. And how would you describe what I like to use the word tribe, and I love to use the word growing Mrs. Green tribe, because it means all of us. So how would you describe who your tribe was then, which I would consider definitely early adopters, and how that has emerged or grown into the growing community of a tribe that you continue to sustain?
I see no difference, really, thinking about who the first people were who signed up and who the people are that have signed up, say, this last week. I see no difference. It's just that there's many more of them. The world has completely shifted since, say, 20 years. In the beginning, we had to really, really explain what positive news was and why it would be a good thing for people to focus on positive news and what sustainability was and how we could live holistically and all of that. All those givens now then was new. But the people who then got it, I think basically, well, they were maybe earlier than the people who now get it. But it also just depends on, you know, when it dawns on you, when it comes close. And I think everybody has their own moment in time. I must say, whenever I meet someone who reads The Optimist, I feel like I meet a friend, like I'm meeting a friend that I never knew I had, because I feel very connected to each and every reader of our publication. It's always me when I'm on a conference, for instance. I meet many people. They come up to me and tell me how they like the magazine, and I go like, "Yeah, I like you," because, you know, it's just a certain feel that people have. They're open-hearted. They're somewhat courageous. They're daring to be themselves. They're daring to be authentic, and live and come from their own source.
And you have the ability then to connect the what I call the big green dots, the big sustainable dots, which you have been doing for a long time. So let's go down to a little bit of the from the macro to the micro. There are a vast number of topics in this world that we now use and sometimes overuse sustainability. And I don't think it can be overused. I think it is the word when you really think about it. When you started, there are still topics and what I would call, you know, genres or areas in business, in energy, in health. How did you decide? I don't feel like it's limiting, but I feel as though there are hot topics that you cover. What's the process that you used and continue to use in developing what is a hot topic? What do you want to share with your readers and the people that are part of your community?
First of all, the most that we want to share is to show that there are over a zillion solutions to the problems that we have or think we have and that are unsolvable. They're not. Each and every problem that is out there already has a solution. And we like to report on them. Like we'll issue after issue, we'll keep mentioning all kinds of environmental solutions, social solutions, educational solutions, and we mulch them over and show new examples of them over and over. But what's at the core, I think what's the core problem is why these solutions aren't being implemented. And that is that's sort of an underlying vibe in our magazine, that we address every issue as well. That's more the inner personal stuff. Like, what's keeping me from fully embracing the world I would like to live in? What's keeping us all together from that? So we're doing more sort of psychological, maybe somewhat spiritual topics where we address the true root cause of the issue that our world is struggling with. None of them, again, none, the world that we're living is, the world that we're living in truly is a reflection of what's living inside of us. And that is, of course, like spiritual talky talk that has been going on for centuries, but it's still the same truth. We're free to create whatever world we like to see. And now the interesting thing is what's keeping us from it, and that's where we're focusing a lot too. And showing through the stories, showing how some people overcome their reluctance or their fear and boldly embrace new ways of starting businesses, starting schools, dealing with interpersonal stuff, organizing themselves in groups in ways that are honor each and every member. I mean, there's so many new developments that come from people who truly pioneer and truly show courage.
And it's interesting to me when you first started the interview talking about what the regular press, as I call it, tries to do is not very much different now than it was when you started 20 years ago. There's a fear base. They can put things out there that end up being scary and not true. So to me, remaining true to your core values is something that is not only noteworthy but most impressive, because you're constantly looking into the creativity of mankind for solutions. That's how I feel. It's like you're looking, what can we do? We have all these challenges. And I would like to ask you, from a global view and an international audience and the lives that you touch globally, do you have one thing that you think is our biggest challenge as a planet and the opportunities that it provides us to work together in overcoming it? Or do you think that there is not one thing, that it's a...
I do think if you go to the core of the core of the core of the matter, it's not the kind of fuel that we use. And that's just the result of our thinking and of the choices that we make. And so if we go to the core of the place from where we make those choices and go deep into that, it's really all to do with fear. It's just fear. It's, what kept us from abolishing slavery? I believe it took the UK 30 less years to decide to abolish slavery than it did the US. Not that I necessarily want to compare those two, but there comes a point when you're ready to make a bold move and accept that if you abolish slavery, yes, it will have an impact on how the economy is run, because at that time we were using and abusing human power, human physical power, to fuel our economy. These days, we're using and abusing the planet's power to fuel our economy. Of course, it's way worse to use humans. That's ghastly. But it's still the same thinking that allows us to misuse the planet. So we're needing to do some boldness. When we abolished slavery, within 50, 60 years, the Industrial Revolution started blooming. As a result, that we couldn't use humans anymore to work for us, we shifted and it became machines. Well, it's just time for another such bold move and just stop abusing the planet and take a chance and trust that there are solutions. Even if we stop using, even if we stop abusing the planet, we will very well survive, and actually we will survive in a better way, in a much healthier, happier way for all.
And, you know, the transparency of what's going on in our world right now, the sad thing to me, and it is okay to say I'm sad about it, is there is still slavery in place in so many countries throughout the world because of the wages and the conditions and the factories and the number of hours. So it's still something that stays with us, but not probably in the most heinous ways that there were back when we had slavery in the United States. But that's a perfect segue to your living internationally and what you've done since you began. In my world, in the past 5 years of interviewing people, it doesn't seem as though the United States really is emerging as a leader for the vision of sustainability and people living more consciously and more sustainability. And I'd love you to comment on that.
Well, I've been living in the U.S. for 9 years, and coming from Europe, I can compare. And I don't adhere to what you're saying. Your impressions of the U.S., to me, well, they're not my impressions. I meet people who do daunting things. They don't talk about them. They actually do them. They are them. And I see that in Europe as well, but I see it here totally, too, totally. We are in the Bay Area. Our offices are in the Bay Area, and this, of course, is a special place with a lot of innovation going on. But even throughout the U.S., I meet people who do astonishing things and that are highly inspirational to me.
Every guest I've had on, I feel totally inspired. But when I go to energy conferences and I see all these, you know, infographics and on, they just say, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. And I am like you, I like to live in a place of hope, possibility, and change. Yeah. So we have, believe it or not, I knew this was going
to
happen.
But you can go to those conferences are there in Europe as well. And there are pockets that look pretty hopeless in Europe. And there are pockets here that look pretty hopeless. But by and large, I really, really, salute the American spirit in embracing new things.
Well, that
in courage in moving forward.
And that makes me happy, and it affirms what I want to believe. So we have to take a very quick break. We will be right back with more questions for Elaine about women leadership, women in sustainability, and our changing world of publishing. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at chapmantucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And our guest today is certainly inviting us to think, to live consciously, to go deeper, deeper, deeper. We'd like to welcome back Alain Dupuis, founder and navigator, I love that, of Ode Magazine, News for Intelligent Optimists, and who has held that candle, that beacon, that bright, let's go, we can do this, tapping into the creativity of humankind. And I just love that indomitable spirit. So before we go into the role of women as leaders, which I am sure you have some thoughts on, is there a reason, one of the things that I read about you, I really would love to know your thinking, is what you're doing does in fact help promote peace. And can you expand on that thought a little bit?
Yeah, I think the stories that we spread have peace in their basis. It's all about peace. Either it's about inner peace, it's about finding your truth and standing up for it and being in it and sharing it, or it's like really tangible, practical, logistical sort of approaches to how you can enhance the world. And enhancing it always means for the better of all. So I would see peace in that.
I would see peace in that too. And there's common ground. I mean, to me, what I see is there really is such common ground, and it feels really good to watch and see the threads that can be integrated when you're all about global sustainability. Now, yeah. What is your thought? I mean, you are clearly a nationally, internationally, globally recognized woman leader. Do you feel as though there's been any change in women as emerging or being more visible in their role as leaders in the role of sustainability, in the call to action that we're all starting to hear and address?
Yeah, I do believe so. And I think actually almost by definition, as soon as a woman embraces her own strength, her own power, she is contributing by definition to sustainability, because I believe that true femininity has everything to do with sustainability.
And I think I love that answer. Are there some women leaders that have crossed your path that have put a footprint on your soul that you hold up as examples of global leaders, and why did they touch your life so profoundly? I'd love to know about who were some of your role models.
Well, I am really fond of Anita Roddick, the founder of The Body Shop, and she passed away a few years ago. But getting to know her spirit, her spriteness, her feminine explosiveness, her to-the-pointness, and her warmth, her depth, her courage. I still have her photo on my fridge, and I love looking at her. So that's one. And there are a few others. They're not as famous, per se, but they've been very, truly, deeply meaningful to me, personally.
On your journey, and that's, you know, I totally agree with you about the role of women as leaders. I think it's time. We had a guest that is also a friend of our mutual friend, Molly Stranahan, Bernard Leotard, on the show with Jackie Dunn. And one of the things he said at the end of the show, I mean, here's a world economist, talked about there has to be more of a balance on the planet between the masculine and the feminine, and he made it very clear, not male and female, but definitely the masculine and feminine energy, and we're getting more in balance as we see the voice of women emerge more strongly. I think it's a great balance.
So yes, I see that too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's get like down to earth, because I like to know some specific examples. You, I am sure, have a vast amount of journalists and people that would like to be in the magazine to get what their views are in print. And one of the most recent articles you had is something that I'm very interested in the area of nutrition. And it was about coconut milk. It was a great article. I happen to agree with what it says. But as a founder and as the navigator in actually delving into the topics, how do you pick them, and how do you assure that what you're putting out to people is information that your tribe can trust and that it's accurate? I mean, it's a big, huge task.
It is, and I don't pretend that everything that goes into the magazine per se carries my personal signature on it. Like, it's not as if I've been okaying each and every article. We have a team, and we discuss things amongst ourselves, and by and large, we mostly agree on the choice of stories. And we have a certain grit If you go through the magazine, it might look as if it's just random stories here and there, but truly there is a grid, there's a sequence, and we adhere to that. So we look for certain topics, and we look for certain certain length or depth stories, and it is a sort of, it's like a menu, it's like a well balanced food menu. The stories can't all be hefty in depth, or they can't all be confrontational, or they can't all be spiritual, or there's a balance. And then we never have. People often ask us, where do you get your stories? Like, it must be really hard, but it's not. What's hard is to choose, to decide which ones that are on our, that are on these piles on our desks, which ones are the ones that we will choose for the next issue.
I know, it's like picking guests for Mrs. Green's World, and we're, you know, my assistant, my producer told me that we're booked out through September, and I said, like, I want to be on every day because there are so many great, unbelievable people. How do you decide, and at which point, what is a hot topic? Because one of the things I noticed about the research I did, there is an underpinning of fun also, which I think is a critical part of sustainability. Mm-hmm. So somehow you psychologically or very cleverly include fun in there by having topics like thrillionaires and all of those things. So how do you decide, you know, where, how does that lead to the fun factor? Because that nourishes our soul as well.
Yeah, well, I hope that this magazine reads lightly. I mean, that's always what we aim for, inspiring and lightly. And I mean, we just watch out for that. Our editorial members will say, hey, you know what? To me, it becomes too heavy. Let's throw that article out and let's put this one in. It's a matter of balancing. It's creative. It's a creative process. We take a couple of months for each issue to produce it. So we have six issues per year, and at the beginning of the year, we already know what the main topics are going to be in the six issues that we're working on. So at any given time, we're working on six issues all the time. They're in different stages, but we're modeling them. And creating them.
And are there times when, I mean, once in a while in this journey for me, there are things that kind of stump me. And I was challenged the other day by my stand on fracking by someone I definitely respect. Mm-hmm. And he was, I have a lot of respect for him for what he does locally and globally and his job in the world. And he sent me an article in The Economist that basically was strongly supporting our transporting natural gas out of the country. And, you know, we went to it, but after it was over, there was a bit of consternation in me. This is a person I respect. He challenged my views. And have there been examples that when you talk about going a little bit deeper for you, where you heard one side and then heard another and sat there and went, huh, I'm really going to have to make sure I have a strong opinion or a balanced opinion.
That happens.
On this.
That happens. And sometimes we invite people into the magazine or thoughts into the magazine to help our audience think. Because it's good. It's good to have a bit of a provocative thought in there. And then, you know what, you're free to pick it up. It's us writing this magazine doesn't mean we necessarily endorse everything. It means we are hoping to tickle people's thinking so that they can make up their mind. And by choosing the topics, we tickle by choosing the topics.
Well, and I was tickled when I read many, many things in there, but it's like my tagline, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. I mean, it's the same idea, like, okay, we're going to put the information out. And fracking is a good one because I had Winona Howder from Food and Water Watch on about a year ago, and then I got criticized by quite a few people for it being a biased, slanted story. Yeah. So I invited a professor from the University of Arizona who is one of the top five you know, she's an expert witness on fracking, both for and against in certain conditions and the way that the natural gas companies do it. And it was an opportunity for me to learn quite a bit. So like she made me think. She didn't tell me what to think. Let's go back for a minute to some of the big global issues. And I'm very interested in what you think some of the top ones are. There's energy, water, food. But in terms of what you see with you and your team and your husband, are there top issues that you think we need to try to focus in on a little bit?
Well, you know, as you were talking about fracking, my thoughts went to, we can do a lot of pros and cons for fracking, but what's really at the core of this issue, because it's not a pretty issue anyway, I mean, it's however you look at it, even your friend, the one that you had on the show, probably doesn't feel 100% great about it either.
Totally.
But the thing
right.
is, it is how finance is organized, because it's really the financial incentives that drive people to like or to accept fracking, and that drive people to accept that they're wouldn't be enough food for everyone to survive on, which of course is nonsense. There's a lot of food that's been thrown out. It's the financial system, it's the incentive for people worldwide to use their energies in a certain way and not in another way that is more humanity serving. And so if you're asking me what topic is really at the core of what we're facing worldwide, I think it's time that we get in touch with how we use our money and what the money means to us. Like, what does it stand? How does it play up, or how does it show up in our lives? And how does it make us make our decisions? And you were talking about slavery still going on in this world in certain areas, which is true. It's not allowed like it used to be 2 centuries ago, but it is still going, it's still happening. And there too, the slavery itself is the result of, I think, how we think about our economy, about how we make money.
And about how we purchasing. I mean, I think when we talk about the role of women leaders, I think it comes, there's the macro level of their voice, but there's the level of everyday. Women make a lot of the purchasing decisions in families, and I certainly have influenced my daughters about, if you're buying it, this pair of earrings for $7 from a big box store, try to think about who made it and where it came from and at what cost.
Yeah.
So doing
those
that.
Those are, of course, the micro minute decisions that we all make, and through that bulk of micro decisions, we determine the course of the worldwide economy. That is so true. It is so true. We should definitely recognize what power we have by buying or not buying certain products. I'm thinking it's time to rethink how we've organized ourselves worldwide. And again, if we should want to live in a different world, I think it would cost maybe 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5 years to really totally transition to a world where there is enough for all, where no babies die, where no kids are growing up unattended, where there is employment, where the planet also is left alone and is left thriving. Because all these solutions, they are there. Question is, why aren't we going for them? And that's an inner journey that everyone needs to take at some point, and that we need to take massively as cultures, as countries, as nations, as the world.
And what delights me about your presence on the show and what you stand for globally is that it is that deeper cut of, what do we want? What does consumption mean? Jackie, I refer to them, Jackie and Bernard, because they talked about the successful examples of where local currencies are strongly in place and they're working and they have strong economies and it's not based on debt. So there's a whole financial piece. And one of the things that I love is the integration of thought, which I would think an intelligent optimist that I now want to call myself would integrate all of those thoughts into that bigger picture.
Yeah, of course. And the work of Bernard Littard, we've been promoting him for maybe even from our first issue onwards. He's from Belgium, and we're from the Netherlands, so that's, I think he lived like about 2 hours away from us. He was, we were close with him, or we are close with him. And his thinking is so important because it structures what, say the feelings that I have about how things ought to be. Bernard is able to put it into practice, to show how we could transition from this money system to another money system, or to many money systems.
And he certainly shares your view of the world that we can change it, because I want people to always be left after they leave my show feeling as though they're better informed, they have things mm-hmm. to think about,
yeah.
and the possibility of the human spirit is what we have. It's what civilizations
exactly.
have survived mm-hmm. from. So it's an unbelievable opportunity to stay grounded in positive thinking. And I mean, I
yeah.
spent the day with Bernard and Jackie, and I was like, this man is a visionary at such a global level, and I'm doing everything I can to connect them and get people to buy their new book, Rethinking Money. They just finished uh-huh. 7 weeks of an exhausting tour to get the word out for people to rethink how they feel and how they interact around money.
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
are going to have to take another break. Time flies. And when we come yeah. back, what I'd really like to talk about is you've seen a changing world, a rapidly changing world in publishing, given the growth mm-hmm. of social media. You've gone from print to keeping that to an almost, we're in a flash mob world of infographics and, you know, 3 minute bits of information. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. I am thrilled to be interviewing Hélène Dupuis, founder and navigator of Ode Magazine, news for intelligent optimists. We are thrilled to have you, and we're looking forward to the last segment. Please stay here with me. Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We'll be right back.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say, using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook, and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Did you know that even a donated doorknob can help Habitat for Humanity? Habitat's Habastore accepts donated items like furniture, building materials, and appliances. Donations come from commercial builders, malls, restaurants, hotels, and individuals like you. Then, items are bought by bargain hunters who come across the very things they are looking for, just like the right doorknob. The best part is that Habistore sales generate funds for building homes. Call 520-889-7200 or visit HabitatTucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we're certainly being gifted with a lot to think about today. Our guest for this hour has been Alain Dupuy, founder and navigator of Ode Magazine, News for Intelligent Optimists. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us and sharing all of your great vision for a planet of possibility and thriving and a world that works for everyone. And my listeners, don't forget to follow me at mrsgreensworld.com, active on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, so that I can share with you news about sustainability on a global scale and you find out about great guests that are on today. So the biggest part of businesses, not the biggest, but one of the things that really has to be in place is sustaining yourself as a business. And you have been in one of the most rapidly changing worlds from print to social media. And I'd love you to go into some of the, did you see it coming? What has changed? How has it changed what you have done in terms of the actual, I mean, there's a lot of pieces to the massive, to the enormity of publishing a magazine six times a year. So yes. Did you see it coming? How did you start getting ready for the big wave of change?
Oh, well, we're still in print, and right. we've embraced the entire online segments, really. And did we see it coming? Yeah, we did see, of course we saw it coming, but it helped us to transition to what we are now. And we know that we have a more sustainable model right now, business model, than we had beforehand. Now we're no longer dependent on advertising. We used to be sort of 50-50 depending on advertising and subscriptions. We have weaned off of that, and we've become way more proactive, and it's become way more fun for our readers, who we now call members, to be part of our organization, because they can listen into the raw interviews that we do. They can join us for workshops with the people that we interview or the organizations that we work with. There's a lot of learning to be had, a lot of linking up to be done through this membership situation, and they still have the paper, the print magazine, which is even prettier and richer than it was before. And of course, there's an online membership possible as well, where you don't have a print magazine, but you just read it on your iPad. So we have transitioned from being merely a print publishing company to more of an all-round news experience company.
And one of the most important observations I'd like to make about it and what you've done in terms of staying up with there's definitely an age piece to this, because all of the young people that I know, the way they get their information is somewhat differently than I get it. Mm-hmm. And my friends all have stopped getting maybe the daily newspaper, but every single one of them subscribes to the Sunday edition of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. So they're walking in both worlds as well. What do you see some of the positives of going to a more, a less print-based, mm-hmm. in terms of numbers? I mean, is it feel good to be able to reach massive amount of numbers?
Yes. Totally. A part of our mission was always, when we first started this, we always knew that we were wanting to bring positive news to the entire world. So we envisioned having magazines in all the languages, in all the newsstands all over the world. And now we realize we just need to do language groups We have members in India, in Indonesia, in South Africa. Whoever reads English well enough can subscribe, and does. We have people show up in these workshops. They come from all over the planet in the weirdest time zones. So for us, it has burst open, and it's fun for the members as well to know that they're partaking globally. It's not just an American enterprise anymore. It's become global. I mean, it's really us linking up with like-minded people all over.
And what was is Oldwire still in the beta stage? Is that a new site?
Oldwire, we are still in the process of blending our two sites. And we're almost there, maybe another week, maybe another 2 weeks. Oldwire used to be what we were working with. It was a news aggregate where we still pull positive news from other sources as well to our site, and we have our own positive news there. So Oldwire is still a great visit, but eventually, I mean, but the new one is called theoptimist.com, and eventually the new one will be called theoptimist.com, and it will be a blend of both.
And we'll be sure to keep on top of this with the Mrs. Green's World team so that we can get the word out also. Now, there's a I love calls to action, and I would love to know what, for our listeners, you would say, here is my request, my call to action. Is it go to your site and subscribe to the magazine, become a part of your Facebook community, which I see there, that's migrated to the mm-hmm. Intelligent Optimist. What would mm-hmm. you like leaders that are emerging thought leaders to take away from this interview and to mm-hmm. say, this is my call to action and it's one thing I can do today?
Well, I'm sure that everyone who's listening to this program is a friend that I've not yet met. I'm sure about
yes.
that.
Yes, I'm sure about that too.
Yeah, and I would be really happy if they would all take a look and maybe subscribe for a free issue. You can do that. If you go to theoptimist.com, you can punch in your name and you can get a free issue. The latest issue will come to you. You can check it out and see how you like it, if it's a valuable read for you, if it inspires you, and I trust it will.
I think that's a great opportunity and a great invitation to people.
See how it resonates. See how it resonates with you and see where you stand and see if it is an addition to your life and to your inner life especially, and to your optimistic view to life, and if it encourages you to take on the things that you've always been dreaming about that you were wanting to take on, and see if it supports you in becoming more you and doing the things you are meant to be doing.
And there are articles, things like, you know, what you can do to change the world. Sometimes it's daunting. And there are, to me, somewhat heavier topics, but it does invite you to think about your life and many, many, many aspects of it. So now my next question for you, my new friend, is in terms of your journey and that of your husband, and I assume your family, what would you like the legacy of Ode Magazine to be known for? It's so clear to me, it's not about your ego, it's about something you were both called to do and then did and continue mm-hmm. to do. What would you like the legacy of Ode Magazine to be? And do you even have an answer for that? It's like I'm sitting there reading hours of research and saying there's so much here.
Well, Ode, or currently The Optimist,
right,
has given us so much. Just doing it has been so rewarding to ourselves. Our kids have grown up in this space, and they found their path, and we're grateful for all that it brought us. And as far as the legacy is concerned, I hope it will live forever and always keep supporting people to embrace their true calling and to have the courage to go for it. I have to say, a big, big journey really, really starts with taking the first little step. That's how it started for us. We never knew it was going to be this big. I never knew I was going to be living in San Francisco. I was just a mom with four little kids living in Rotterdam, going for a dream and daring it, But, you know, it wasn't, I mean, I truly have to add a lot of modesty. Life really took us here. And I think if you set out on doing what you're wanting to do, you'll find a lot of people who really enjoy what you're doing. And in some way, it is meaningful to them. And they will support you in it because it is meaningful to them.
And I think that one of the things that I can honestly say, being very present in the interview and not knowing what your answers are going to be, there are times, because I am new to the journey in terms of the level of awakening that I believe I'm experiencing in the past 5 years, is that you really maintain your optimism. And I said in the beginning of the show, there are times when I am thinking, do we really have hope? Can we turn things around fast enough? And someone said to me when I was in Alaska at this energy summit, they said, it's just a normal stage to go through because you're still inundated and some of the information and the guests you have, it's daunting. And there's a lot of information that comes in. And sometimes I find myself wanting to sift through all of it. And then I get an intelligent optimist like you, not to be cliche, that says you can lead a happier life in a world that is a better place than I might be thinking it is right now, and not focus on the slavery and the human trafficking, but how I can be engaged to help wake people up and have guests like you that will make people think. So that's a wonderful legacy.
Yeah, and the what you're saying about keeping up the optimism, well, it's been a long journey for us, and
almost
we've grown
20
up
years.
A lot. Yeah, right. So we've been growing up a lot ourselves, and our understanding of optimism has grown and has deepened a lot. And I think if people would take the trouble to go to theoptimist.com and only read up on optimist articles, because what people think optimism is, I don't think it is. Optimism isn't just waking up happy. Optimism is a mindset. It is courage. It is perseverance. It is willingness to let go. It is even willingness to hurt, to get in touch with pain, and to come out reborn. It is about not giving up, but it's not just bluntly jaw clenching, clenching, not giving up. There's so much art to being an optimist. It's such inner work to truly be an optimist.
And it's not a Pollyanna approach that you have. And adding the word intelligent optimist, I mean, I like that. I want to honor the feelings that I have when it does feel like a daunting day and yet continue on with my work. And one of the words that you used that I love is be bold. I love the word bold. And I know people thought I was crazy when I said I was going to start a radio show. I had no business in radio. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know how to turn on a control. And in fact, I still don't. But being willing to take that first step, which leads to another, which leads to another. And that's what I hope that listeners in the show that are my friends, there are friends I haven't met and many of whom I have. It's really great. So we don't have a lot of time left on the show, but I want to cover any thoughts that you might want to share, something I didn't cover. And I would like to ask you about your children and your family. And I always want to know about that. It's the place from which I come. And I say to people, family trumps everything in terms of my walk in this life. How have the children, the four little ones that you had joining you on this journey, what is their piece in this?
Well, they grew up in this. They have been kids of an entrepreneurial couple,
right?
And they have been going through the ups and downs of it all, and they have embraced our idealism in their own way. Our eldest is preparing herself to become the meanest human rights lawyer ever.
And, love it.
She's a super sweet-looking girl, but she's also razor-sharp and has her heart set on setting some things right. And then the second one is Star, has graduated in international mediation and conflict resolution, and she found herself her first job. And the third one is also going to go for human rights, to become a human rights lawyer.
She's at Bard, and she'll soon go to, this summer she'll intern in South Africa, in Johannesburg, with a women's organization, women's legal rights organization. And then our dude, our guy, he'll be turning 18 this summer.
Our dude.
He's a senior at school, and he is working really hard to leave us for a long gap year. He wants to explore, and for him it is it's more the technical stuff that he's intrigued with. He's right now here in the living room. He's building a hydrogen fuel cell.
Oh my gosh!
Believe it or not.
Thank God that you fit him in, because we never want the baby to be left out. Thank you so much for being a part of the show today. I am sure our paths will cross. Next week, we have another great show. Elisa Gravitz from Green America. Everybody, make it a great green week, and thanks for being a part of my world.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.